طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح، طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's continuing occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program features the Palestinian narrative from a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. This Week in Palestine was created by Sharif Pham and is continued in his memory. This is your host, John Roberts. With the nonsense that Palestinians are a minority in Israel, you cannot argue that the Palestinians aren't an integral part of Greater Israel, occupied and dispossessed, but integral. So argues journalist Gideon Levy in the August 25th edition of the Israeli newspaper Aretz. We begin this week with the full text of Levy's article, which continues, and I quote, "A delusion under which most Israelis live lets them invent vacuous excuses based on the virtual reality they built for themselves. According to this fallacy, the State of Israel only controls its own citizens, most of them Jewish, of course, but nobody counts the millions of other subjects who fall under its control, at least as much, maybe more. They're invisible. That's the only way one can argue comfortably and learnedly about whether Israel is a Jewish and democratic state. The discussion is a fascinating intellectual one, with only one problem. It has long since lost its relevance. A country where about half the subjects are not Jewish can't be Jewish. If it insists on being Jewish by force, it isn't democratic. A state where half the subjects are denied rights can't be democratic. In a state that doesn't intend to change its borders or the nature of its rule, this discussion is merely part of the delusion of perpetually parading around naked, but feeling fully clothed. Two peoples equal in size live under Israeli rule. About 6.3 million Jews and 6.3 million Arabs, half and half. That's the outcome of 50 years of life in the binational state, not Jewish and not democratic. To the 1.8 million Arab citizens, you have to add the 2.7 million Palestinians living under direct Israeli rule in the West Bank, and about 1.8 million living under indirect Israeli rule in Gaza. The fate of all these subjects, from registration at birth to the currency they use and most of their rights, is set in Israel. They are subject to its rule. They are part of the state. Israel tries to shake off its Palestinian subjects when it finds it convenient. At night it invades their homes, and by day it claims they aren't under its control. But you can't have it both ways. You can't argue that the Palestinians aren't an integral part of Greater Israel, occupied and dispossessed, but integral. The fact that this reality was forced on them by the military and that they aren't part of Israel's partial democracy doesn't mean they don't belong. The Jewish settlers in the West Bank are part of Israel, and their Palestinian neighbors aren't. That can't be, even if most of Israel's Jews prefer it. In a piece this month in Aretz's Hebrew edition, when Gadi Taub applauds Jewish democratic Israel, he bases his argument on the Arabs being a minority and the enlightened state treating them based on the EU Treaty for Protecting Minorities. It sounds lovely, but it's completely unreal. minorities, Finland's 5.5% Swedish minority, Muslims in France, and Australia's 450,000 Aborigines are minorities. But half the population isn't a minority. The Arabs are only a minority based on false presentations, ignoring the existence of most of them. Just as Israeli TV viewing habits are only measured in Jewish households because that's convenient for the Jews, Taleb only counts a small part of the minority because it's convenient for him. The Palestinians aren't minority. They're half the population. They're not migrants. They're locals. In Aretz's Hebrew edition earlier this month, Tzvia Greenfield counts them as Taub does, and therefore can sing her praises of Jewish democracy. But Ronnie Shockin, in his piece, lifts the veneer that covers the state's contents, which are not Jewish and not democratic. As the era of the two-state solution draws to a close, and on the eve of the debate's diversion to the real issue, rights in the binational state that has been in existence for some time, it's time to stop talking about the Palestinians as a minority. Anyone who wants them to be a minority should have withdrawn from the West Bank long ago. But anyone who wants to keep the West Bank should withdraw from talking about a Jewish majority. There's no way around that, not even with the help of 1,000 articles discussing the wonders of this delusion of Jewish democracy. That was an article written by Gideon Levy in the Israeli newspaper Aretz. This week's feature presentation is an address that Israeli historian and author Ilan Pape gave to the Palestinian support organization the Middle East Children's Alliance, MECCA, in Berkeley, California. MECCA is an amazing organization that does critical work all through the West Bank and Gaza in support of meeting the needs of children who live under occupation. Here is Ilan Pape speaking in Berkeley, California.
Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be here. And it's a great honor to be a keynote speaker in an event on behalf of MECCA. I was introduced to MECCA many years ago when one of my sons told me that there is a bus that came to visit us. The bus was Barbara Lubin with quite a few people in it. I thought he was joking, but there was a bus, and they all entered our house. And you probably remember that. And since then, I followed very closely what MECCA is doing, and it's a great honor to be part of the big family of MECCA and to support this sacred work. And I'm really humbled that I was chosen this year to be the keynote speaker. I also want to thank Mona for this very moving introduction. It's always rewarding to hear Palestinians refer to the ethnic cleansing as an affirmation of their own trials and tribulation in a way that I think also opens some hope for the future. Tonight's title comes under the headline of Palestine is still the issue. When I say that Palestine is still the issue, I don't mean that for anyone who sits in this hall or for me, Palestine ever ceased to be the issue. I'm sure for all of us, every day, every time we do something on behalf of Palestine, we don't have to be lectured in any way or persuaded that Palestine is still the issue. Every day brings with it a different image that reminds us that Palestine is still the issue. The most recent image I'm taking with me everywhere I go is the photograph of 12-year-old Dima, who spent 75 days in Israeli jail. The day she was released, the desperation on her parents' face in the face of a ruthless ruler who can do whatever he wants with their children, and the very naive and really breaking, heartbreaking words of Dina, who said, "All I want to do is go back to my friends in school." So we don't need to be reminded that Palestine is still the issue. But I think you understand that the context of this talk is different. A lot of people would tell us that given what's going on in Syria, in Iraq, given the magnitude of the refugee issue in Europe, the economic problems in the United States, Palestine has been marginalized as an issue of global attention, as regional attention, and you cannot galvanize any more people to see Palestine as a central issue of humanity and inhumanity. And I think it is important to remind ourselves why Palestine, in this respect, despite all the horrific things that are happening in Syria and Iraq, in Libya, in Yemen, and despite the problems facing refugees in Europe and here as well, despite all of these destruction, if you want, it is important to remind ourselves that Palestine is the issue, because much of what we see in the Middle East and outside the Middle East is connected to what happened in the past in Palestine and what happens today in Palestine. So in this respect, if you are still committed to Palestine with all your heart, with most of your activity is on behalf of the Palestinians and for the Palestinians, you are also acting on behalf of everyone else who nowadays suffers in the Middle East and beyond the Middle East from inhumanity and crimes against humanity. Palestine is the issue for five major reasons, and I would like to point out each one of them with a short introduction. Palestine is still the issue today because morally it is the last and only remaining struggle of indigenous native people against settler colonialism that is still very active. Palestine is not the only country where settler colonialism was visited upon. This very country we are in was one of the first projects of settler colonialism. Australia, New Zealand, South Africa. But in all these other countries where settler colonialism was definitely prevalent in the past, at least processes of change and transformation were taking place. Palestine is the only active remaining act of settler colonialism, and therefore it is representing the struggle of indigenous people and native people all around the world. Settler colonialism, as you may know, is the movement of desperate Europeans outside of Europe because they were persecuted there, because they felt that Europe was unsafe. And they went to other countries, to other continents. And when they arrived in those new places, they found an indigenous native population. Because they were persecuted, because they were looking for one-way ticket out of Europe, they felt that they don't only want to make the new country a home, but also to make it a homeland. The obstacle in the way of making a new place a homeland were always the indigenous native people. In many cases, the result of this clash between the wish to create a new homeland and the fact that someone else already lived there for centuries was genocide, elimination of the native people. We have to remind ourselves and remain hopeful that Palestine is still the issue because people were not genocided there. Because there in Palestine, the logic of elimination that informed settler colonialism in this country was terrible enough, but was not genocide. People were expelled. Villages were destroyed. The country was de-Arabized and Judaized. But the struggle continues because the people are still there. Because not all the country has been de-Arabized. And because the people themselves have not lost the struggle and the wish to go back to their homeland. And those who are in their homeland have not lost the aspiration to make it once more their beloved homeland. So this is a struggle that brings together the evils of settler colonialism in the past with the evil of colonialism in the present. And in this respect, if we want to be part of a better world that understands that European settlers wreaked havoc, genocide, apartheid, ethnic cleansing all around the rest of the world, it is in Palestine where we can still rectify some of that evil by showing that there is a way towards reconciliation, as was done at least partly in post-apartheid South Africa. So morally, Palestine is the place where the logic of elimination is still at work daily against the Palestinian people, and everyone who experienced it here in the past or still thinks about it can see in Palestine a place where this logic should be tackled, rejected, and replaced by humanization. Settler colonialism is also a human project that was motivated by dehumanization. People who were chased out of Europe and arrived in a place where someone else lived were usually poor people, persecuted people, victims of ethnic cleansing themselves. And in order to justify their transformation into victimizers themselves, they had to dehumanize the native people. They had to dehumanize the indigenous people. Zionism in Palestine is this lethal fusion of these two logics that still operates in 2016, where Palestinians are dehumanized and therefore are an object of elimination. Elimination is not always physical genocide. You can be eliminated by being enclaved and besieged in your own village without the right to move. You can be eliminated by being expelled within your own homeland to another place. You can be eliminated by being robbed of all your civil rights, either to vote or to be elected in a way that can have an impact on your own future. So in this respect, we are witnessing daily the experiment of settler colonialism in Palestine, motivated by these two logic of dehumanization and elimination. And if we are against such inhumanity, then Palestine should be the issue for us. Palestine is also the issue because it has been connected and associated in the most wrong way possible with anti-Semitism. For so many years we were led to believe that the colonization of Palestine was the antidote to anti-Semitism. Europe, the United States, and the West in general used to convince themselves and others that because there was a problem of anti-Semitism, and its worst chapter was in Europe during the Holocaust, the only way to solve the hatred towards Jews because they are Jews was to allow them to colonize Palestine and dispossess the Palestinians. This irrational, this cruel logic that is at the heart of the connection between Zionism and anti-Semitism still fuels most of the support Israel gets in this country, and still is the main ammunition pro-Israeli groups and individuals use in this country to silence any criticism on the Jewish state and its criminal policies. And therefore, Palestine, and that's the second reason that Palestine is still the issue, because the Jewish problem of Europe, the Jewish problem of the West, is a universal problem. It was not only the problem of the Jews. The genocide of the Jews in the Second World War showed the cruelty of modernity, of European enlightenment, of the aspiration of Europeans to be culturally, morally, and politically superior to any other civilization. We need a closure to that terrible chapter in the history of humanity. Allowing Jews to colonize Palestine and dispossess the Palestinians is not the answer for this problem. I don't think today there's much anti-Semitism in the world anyway. But we need to make sure that people have a different conversation about the connection between anti-Semitism and Zionism and Palestine. The Zionization of Palestine increased anti-Semitism, did not lead to its disappearance. A democratic, free Palestine for all is the best antidote to anti-Semitism. And we have to talk to our Jewish friends. And we have to be honest with our Jewish friends that, and some of them are good friends of ours, who still believe that Israel, for some reason, is this insurance company that would be waiting for them should the Holocaust appear again in this country or elsewhere. We have to explain to them that this is not an insurance company. This is a company that destroys and demolishes other people's life, and you don't want to be associated with such an insurance company. Your insurance is in a just, equitable, democratic United States of America, not in a powerful settler colonial state of Israel. Palestine is still the issue because it is connected also to Islamophobia. It has a long history of connection to the fear of Muslims just because they are Muslims. The Balfour Declaration, in which Britain gave something that didn't belong to it to a movement it didn't belong to. The two motives for the British Empire to take part of the Middle East, part of the Arab world, part of the Muslim world, and to grant it to a new ideological movement and promise that the empire would do its utmost to create a homeland there, the two major motives were, surprisingly, anti-Semitism and Islamophobia. There was a fear of Islam, there was a fear of Muslims, very much at the heart of the British policymakers who were about to take the Middle East as a new possession in the empire that already was very big. And they much preferred to have non-Muslim enclaves and kingdoms, if they could, in the new domains, in the new possessions. And at the same time, it was a double bill as far as the Jews were concerned. Here were a group of Jews who came to them and said, we want to leave Europe and to colonize Palestine. This was good news for someone like Arthur Balfour, the British Foreign Secretary. He could see how he can get rid of the Jews and at the same time have a non-Muslim British colony in the Holy Land, which he hoped one day would be restored to the glory of the days of the Crusaders. So Islamophobia in many ways, or put it differently, Palestinians were the first victims of Islamophobia in modern times. They are also the last victims of Islamophobia in our times. It is the fear of Islam, it is the hatred of Islam, it is the animosity to Muslims just because they are Muslims that helped Israel to stop almost a natural process in the United States at the very end of the last century, in which Americans, because of the easy access to information, to knowledge, began to understand what was going on the ground in Palestine. It was the major tool by which Israel, after 2001, associated terrorism with Palestinians in a way that stifled any proper discussion about Israel, Zionism, and Palestine in this country. And we are witnessing it again and again, that attempt to associate violence that is carried out by desperate people in Europe and their supporters with justification for the state terror that Israel exercises against the Palestinians. So if you have a discussion about Palestine, you have a genuine discussion about terror, not a false discussion about terror. You have a genuine discussion about the causes of violence, both in the Middle East, in Brussels, in Paris, in the United States, and everywhere in the world. You have a much better conversation of what connects, or how Palestine is connected to desperation, to violence, if you focus on that country and you don't allow the conversation about terror and the Islamophobic discourse to stifle any genuine discussion about the systematic structure violation of human rights against the Palestinian that has started in the late 19th century and has not stopped for even one day. Palestine is still the issue because it is also an issue of social justice. It is not surprising that you can see in various parts of the world workers who would demonstrate for better pay, for better conditions, who are engaged in industrial action. You will not be surprised to see them don themselves with the Palestinian flag. Because for them, Palestine is the ultimate symbol of injustice. Not only national injustice, not only political injustice, but also social injustice. And you have to ask yourself, why Palestine? Why is the Palestinian flag such an emblem for struggles who, at least on the face of it, have nothing to do with Palestine? And then you understand that it's not because these people think that the atrocities committed against the Palestinians are the worst. Not because they don't know about other cases of inhumanity. Not because they have singled out Israel as the worst rogue state in the world. They are very familiar with worse rogue states that exist. They are very knowledgeable of other inhumanities, which are far worse than what the Palestinians had ever experienced and hopefully would ever experience. It's not out of ignorance that they decided that the Palestinian flag symbolizes a struggle for social justice. Social justice, more than anything else, is a struggle against double talk, against hypocrisy, against exceptionalism, against deception. And no other case of violation of human rights and civil rights can compare with the case of Palestine when it comes to exceptionalism, deception, and double talk. This is something we are all familiar with and we know. It is not only the cruelty of the occupier, the inhumanity of the colonizer. It is the pretense of those who support these actions that this is not what it, that what we see is not a crime, but rather a war of defense, a democratic action, a justified moral policy. We are all familiar both with the double talk, with the language, with the fury, the pretentious fury, the righteous fury that goes along with and accompanies the atrocities on the ground. It is this hypocrisy, more than anything else, that symbolizes for workers around the world the way that they are being treated by their employers, by the multinational corporation, and therefore you can see how many people today understand that the fate of the native as a victim, who was a victim in a settler colonialist project, is the fate of the worker today in the neoliberal system that we are living in. And we will see more and more fusion between the struggle against the inhumanity of shutting a factory, causing the end of a cycle of life in the United States, and the dispossession of the Palestinian from their villages, water resources, and their homeland. The logic of elimination and dehumanization is not just the logic of political movements, it also is the logic of heartless economic powers that control our life. And I think many people, especially in Europe, but I have seen it here in 2008 as well, understand the connection between Flint, Ferguson, Palestine, India, Pakistan, Africa. This is part. You are not only struggle against the criminal policy, you are struggle against the narrative that claims that this is not crime, that this is not a crime, that this is for the benefit of the people, that the whole discourse that pretends to improve people's life but actually destroys them is exemplified in Palestine on a daily, if not an hourly, basis. And I think that's why people all around the world see their own struggle so strongly associated and connected with the struggle for peace and justice in Palestine. And I'm very hopeful in this respect, because I think we were misled by the movement in the United States in particular after the crisis of 2008. There was a very energetic response to the crisis. You're all familiar with that. In different towns, in different cities in the United States, and it petered out. So analysts in the ivory towers of academia said, well, it's gone. This is it. The crisis is over. The reaction to the crisis is over. I think they are totally wrong. This is just the beginning of a mass movement of young people who had enough with the cynicism of politics, whether it is domestic politics, financial politics, economic politics, or foreign politics. The way America behaves in the Middle East as a whole, the immunity it grants Israel, and the domestic policies are all seen as part of a cynical system of politics that has no moral backbone, has no set of values, and has lost the confidence of the people. It is quite it is quite ironic that both in England and in this country, the people who seem to represent at least partly this new young energy and wish for cleaner politics, for morality in politics, are represented by people who are nearly 80 years old. This is wrong. This is not good. May they live very long, but I would have liked to see 20 years old representing these ambitions. I would settle for 65. But there's something in the old values that these two gentlemen represent that the young people recognize as cleaner, as purer, as something that doesn't have the hypocrisy that politics has. And it's not surprising that in the case of Jeremy Corbyn in England, Palestine is the main issue on which he is attacked. And I can assure you, if Bernie Sanders would find the courage to go an extra mile of the 2 yards that he's already walked towards us, if he will take the extra mile, he would find that Palestine is the issue which will define him very much as any other topic he would decide to bring to this campaign. Finally, I would say, and this is very, very important, Palestine is the issue of human rights today. And this is the reason, I think, for so many of us, this is such an important historical juncture. And when I say us, I mean Palestinians, people who support the Palestinians, Israeli Jews, anyone who is involved as an NGO, as an activist, as someone who lives there or someone who was expelled from there. For us, 2016 is a very critical moment. The Palestinians will have to redefine their project of liberation and adapt it to 2016. It is very difficult, given the fragmentation, which is the greatest Zionist success. The Palestinians were fragmented to 5 different groups. Naturally, these groups developed, each one of them developed its own agenda. But we need a united Palestinian front. We need a united Palestinian representative bodies. None of the bodies that exist today represent faithfully the needs and aspirations of the Palestinian. They usually represent a slice of the Palestinian issue, and that kind of slice always serves well the Israelis and those who want to harm the Palestinian people. So I think this is the moment where you have to find a way of redefining the struggle for liberation in Palestine as the most important human rights and civil rights issue in the world. It is possible. The energy you hear from young people all around the world is there ready to put Palestine at the center as the symbol for the struggles for human rights, civil rights, and social justice around the world. But you cannot do it without representation which is authentic and unified of the Palestinian people. The second thing that we have to take into account, and I'm saying this with some depredation because I read the Mecca literature, which I hope is outdated, because there is a commitment to two-state solution there. I'll be sensitive. I'll be delicate. Let me put it this way. I'll try and do it the best I can. 2016, and we have, well, we have another good 7 months for that year, right? This is the second half of 2016 should be the time where we all would be invited to the funeral of the two-state solution. The body is already in the morgue. It's every now and then there's an American negotiator who takes the body out of the morgue, puts some life into it, like Jesus, and makes us feel as if it's still alive and tells us it's just around the corner. But apparently that corner is not on Earth, it's somewhere in Mars. It's time to stop this charade, not because it's right or wrong, because it really does not allow us to have a genuine discussion about the alternative. You cannot have a serious discussion of a different way forward if you still stick to a formula that is irrelevant, has nothing to do with the reality on the ground, and is also not a just one. And I think in this respect, we have to try and persuade people not to be afraid and say, whether they were genuine supporters of the two-state solution, whether they were cynical supporters of the two-state solution, it really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. It's a time to say, maybe it could have worked, maybe it was a good idea. One can understand why even some Palestinians strongly supported it. in 2016, it's a waste of time, it's a waste of energy, it's a waste of human effort that is deeply needed, urgently needed, for finding a different way forward. You cannot do both things. You cannot protect a failed formula and talk of a new formula. You have to bury, you know, you have to bury the idea that, frankly speaking, is the idea that provided immunity for Israel to kill more Palestinians, to make more Palestinian refugees, to demolish Palestinian life and houses, to take more of Palestine, and to render any just solution even more distant than it was before this ill-thought idea was introduced as the only way forward for peace and reconciliation in Palestine. So I think Palestine is still the issue, because we need new thinking on Palestine. We need fresh thinking on Palestine. And it doesn't matter exactly how you're going to frame the idea of a one-state solution. It doesn't matter what exactly you bring to the table when you say, I want to replace the hegemonic language of peace that has helped Israel to continue to destroy Palestine rather than bring peace and reconciliation. It doesn't matter what you bring to the table, but bring something new to the table, and don't rehash formulas and ideas that only benefited those who wanted to destroy Palestine, not those who wanted to bring peace and reconciliation. I say this with some depreciation, because some of our best friends still believe in it. Some of them even religiously still believe in it. But it's time to talk to them as well, and to tell them, we need you on our side. We need every good person, inside and outside, a Palestinian and a non-Palestinian, to join forces with us and find out how do we respect the human rights, the civil rights of both the native population of Palestine and the settler community that now is in its third generation. How do we help them to build a political system that rectified the evils of the past and promises good future life for everyone who is there and everyone who was expelled from there? This is a very important topic. And I will end by saying that this is a particularly important issue, because I think it is connected to everything that goes on in the rest of the Middle East. We have to remember that before Zionism arrived in Palestine, although there was violence, and definitely there was violence, although there were wars in the Middle East, the logic, the two logics I was talking about, of dehumanization, of physical elimination, of elimination, were quite strange to the Middle East. I'm not idealizing the Middle East, I'm just saying that it was European enlightenment that invented settler colonialism, that gave license in the name of enlightenment and progressiveness, the right to dehumanize other people to the extent that you could hunt them as animals in Australia and to kill them as if they were not human beings in the United States of America. This is something that is still an open wound, and Palestine is the bleeding part of that wound. And I think that you have to understand what happens in the rest of the Middle East if you can see that elimination and dehumanization of the Palestinians is not only possible because Israel is strong, is not only possible because Israel has the military capacity to do it, it is possible because Israel has an exceptional treatment in the international community, because it has a license to ethnically cleanse the Palestinians in 1948, and not one international body says anything. It has the license to expel 300,000 Palestinians from the West Bank in 1967, and nobody says a word, including within the more conscientious sections of the Western society. So the whole Middle East is watching and says, the problem is not inhumanity. The problem is not eliminating human beings or treating them as, or dehumanizing them. That is not the problem. The problem is whether you are a member of the exceptional club who is allowed to do it. And Israel is the sole member of this club in the Middle East. So if we want to have, and we need, everybody would agree in this hall, we need urgently a genuine conversation about human rights and civil rights in the Middle East. This is the most urgent problem in Syria, in Iraq. The inhumanity of the governments, the inhumanity of the groups that oppose the governments are at the heart of the bloodshed that we see today, together with imperial interests that exploit the situation in order to increase the flames of the fire rather than to try and bring it down. But you can never have a genuine conversation about human rights and civil rights as long as the exceptionalism of Israel continues. So if you want to talk to Syrians about human rights and civil rights, start in Palestine. Don't start in Damascus. If you want to talk about human rights in the Yemen, in Libya, start in Palestine. People will then believe that you really care about human rights, about civil rights, and Palestine could be the place where it's not only still the issue, but it also can push the issue of human rights and civil rights, and then maybe we will understand why it used to be called the Holy Land. Because now it is the Hollow Land and not the Holy Land, and we have to bring it back to its historical, ethical, and moral, probably place in history, by having this kind of conversation. So I will end by saying that don't let anyone tell you that the Palestine issue is less important than any other issue. Don't give up on Palestine and the Palestinians, and be brave enough to put aside slogans, formulas, solutions which are irrelevant, that are negative, that are destructive, and join the new energy that we are feeling coming out from many parts of Palestine and Palestinian life that wishes to create normal life, democratic life, human life for anyone who lives between the River Jordan and the Mediterranean and anyone who was expelled from that homeland and wishes to come back. Thank you.
You have been listening to Israeli historian and author Ilan Pappe speaking to the Middle East Children's Alliance in Berkeley, California. And that is our program this morning. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You'll find us here at 90.3 FM every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. You can also stream us live on your computer at wzbc.org. You can find our past programs on our archive. Go to truthandjusticeradio.org, all one word, truthandjusticeradio.org, and click on Archive. Check it out. Thanks for listening, and we hope you will join us again next Sunday and every Sunday. You are tuned to WZBC 90.3 FM, Newton, Massachusetts. And this is John Roberts wishing you a good morning.